Okay, I would like to start with something that has to do with this coming week's Sedra, and also with Shivasar Batamos and the 3 weeks. And there's only one problem. I haven't yet finished polishing this up. It's in the stages of being created. So I'm going to use you as my guinea pigs and sounding board to work this out, and hopefully if it becomes something, it's going to be my drasha for Shabbos. So if you put thumbs down on it, you're going to make me prepare something else for Shabbos, and I really don't want to do that. So if you'll help me work it out, it'll be okay. Okay, let me start with a medrash that I've explained in the past in a similar way, but I want to explain a little bit differently and expand it to explain quite a few other things. The medrash says like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu is told that he is imminently going to die, and he's not going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu's first concern is for the Jewish people. Yifkol Hashem Elokei HaRuchos Ish Al HaEda. He says, God, okay, if you're taking me away, provide a new leader for the Jewish people. To which God responds, according to the Medrash, Ad Shetitzavuni Al Bonai, before you command me concerning my children, Titzave Bonai Olai, command my children about me. And the next parsha in the Sedra is the parsha of Korbanos. As Korboni, Lachmi, Leishai, the sacrifices that we have to bring on a daily, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and every Yontif. So God basically says, before you command me about my children, command my children about me. And the Medrash gives a mashal, an example, an allegory. What's the mashal? A queen is dying. And she says to her husband, please take care of my children. After I die, please take care of our children. To which the king says, before you command me to take care of the children, why don't you command the children that they respect me properly and don't rebel against me? Very difficult. I mean, the Rabbanu Shalom, first of all, what's the connection between what the king told his wife? Tell our children not to respect me, and not rebel against me, and the bringing of sacrifices. What's the connection with that? And what does it mean? God says, before you tell me what to do with the children, in other words, to get them a leader, tell them about the sacrifices. What's the idea? I was thinking the idea could be the following. If you look at the job description that the Jewish people gave of Moshe Rabbeinu's job as the leader of the Jewish people, when they thought that he was gone, when they committed the sin of the golden calf, and you look at how Moshe Rabbeinu describes his job description, they're completely different. What did the Jewish people say? They thought Moshe was gone. So they went to Aaron and they said, Kum asei lanu Elohim, make us a power. Well, they wanted, according to many opinions, not someone to take God's place. They wanted a power. Elohim is a judge. Elohim can mean an earthly power who has authority, an authority figure. Kum asei lanu Elohim, make us a leader. Now, what's the purpose of that leader? Asher yelchu lefaneinu, who will walk before us. Why? Ki zeh Moshe ha'ish, because Moshe, this man, lo yadanu mehayalo, we don't know what happened to him. So it seems very simply that they're looking for a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu, because we don't know what happened to Moshe. So make us a authority, a leader who will walk before us. That's how they described Moshe's tafkid, his job. Okay, he goes before us. When Moshe now, in this week's Sedra, asks that God replace him, so he says the following, Yifko Hashem Elokei Aruchos Ish Al Ho'eda. God, the one who knows all the different spirits of people, should appoint a person over the congregation, Asher Yetze Lifnehem Vasher Yovo Lifnehem, who will go out before them and come back before them. Vasher Yotzeim Vasher Yivyeim, who will bring them out and bring them in. Very different description. They describe the leader going out and walking in front of the people. And he describes going out before them, coming back before them, bringing them out, and so on. What's the difference between them? The difference between them, I think, can be illustrated with the following argument, which I think is not really an argument. Everybody agrees to what I'm going to tell you. It's a matter of practicality. There's a Gemara. The Gemara says that Mishiyesh lo chole besoch besa, a person who has, Rachmana litzlan, somebody sick in his home, Yelech etzel chacham, should go to a sage, V'yavakesh olav rachamim, and he'll ask for mercy, he'll daven for the person. Simple meaning, the Nemuke Yosef says, if you have someone sick, go to a Talmud Chacham and ask him to daven for the sick person. Says the Nemuke Yosef, that's why there is a custom that we have, that we make a Mishaberach by Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos. Why do we make Mishaberach for sick people? Because the Talmidei Chachamim, the Rabbanim, are there in Shul, and they hear the Tefillah, and they answer Amen. So they are basically davening for the welfare of these sick people, and since the Gemara said it's a good idea to go to a Talmud Chacham and to ask him to pray for someone who's sick, you accomplish that by saying a Mishaberach in front of the Talmidei Chachamim on Shabbos in Shul. That's in the Mukhe Yosef. The Meiri says a completely different idea. The Meiri says what it means is the following. If you have someone sick in your home, you should go to a Chacham, and he will teach you how to pray for that sick person. He's not going to pray for you. He's not going to pray for the sick person. But he'll teach you how to do it. And you should pray for the sick person, except you may not know how to do it properly. So you need the Chacham to teach you how to do it. Very different approach to leadership. The Nemuke Yosef says the leader does it for you. You go to him, he prays for you. Same thing that the people said by the Chet HaEgel. Asher Yelchu Lefaneinu. We want a leader who'll go in front of us, a trailblazer. He will do for us. He'll do what we can't do. He'll go ahead of us and take care of preparing the way for us. He'll do it for us. Moshe Rabbeinu said that's not what a leader is all about. A leader doesn't do it for you. He teaches you how to do it. No leader has a direct line to God that no Jew has. Every Jew has a direct line to God. Except there are people who don't know how to diet. So even the Nemuke Yosef, perhaps, is talking about a person who doesn't really know how to daven well. And the Talmud Chacham davens better. So he knows how to dial. Until he can teach you how to dial, let him at least daven for the person who's sick. By the time he teaches you how to dial, maybe the guy may be dead. What? No. He says that maybe is the first line. That is a reasonable line of action. But it's not the goal. The goal is that eventually he'll teach you how to do it. You won't need him.
He'll say he'll daven for you.
Yeah. That's the first stage. He's talking about until he'll be able to teach you, you have to go to him to daven for you if you don't know how to do it yourself. But he would agree. No. I'm saying he would agree to the Meiri that ideally, eventually, the leader should teach you how to daven and shouldn't have to do it for you. But in any case, the Meiri for sure says not like that. That the main idea is the goal, the ideal. The Meiri could agree also. Until he'll teach you how to daven, the guy's sick. So he'll daven for you. But the ideal is not that he should do it for you. The ideal is he should teach you how to do it. Because he's no different than you are. Except he may know more. He may be on a higher level. And therefore, the goal is that the leader should teach. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu aptly described his role as Asher Yetze Lifnehem. The leader is supposed to go out in front of them. Asher Yovo Lifnehem. Asher Yetze Lifnehem. Asher Yovo Lifnehem. The leader doesn't go in front and blaze the trail. He goes before the people and is an example to them, to teach them what to do. And then he comes back and he instructs them from what they saw and what they're impressed with. Vashir Yotziyim, and then he brings them out. Vashir Yiviyem, he brings them in. He's there as a guide and a mentor and an example, not necessarily as a trailblazer who does it for you. That is the major point. Therefore, what the Rabbanim Shem told Moshe Rabbeinu was the following. You want me to appoint a leader over the Jewish people. And both of us understand that the leader is not there to take the place of the people. The leader is there to bring out the best within the people. The leader is more of the person who brings out the potential that the people have, not necessarily does it for them. Therefore, before you command me on my children to get them a leader, first command them about bringing sacrifices. Now, the Shurei Das and others explain what's the idea of sacrifices. Bringing an animal sacrifice somehow is ma'orer, it awakens within the person all of his qualities vicariously through what he does with the animal. Somehow the sacrifice connects in all the powers in the universe, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, because the animal contains all of them. The mineral sees to it that the plant life can exist, so the plants absorb the minerals, the animals eat the plants, and man takes the animal, which contains everything beneath it, and directs it and elevates it to God. And therefore, he takes all of the physical powers in the world and directs them towards God. That's what a sacrifice represents. And God created the world. The people should be dynamic. God wants to shower us with goodness. But he made that motor, that ma'arechet, that system that he created, fueled by us. We're the ones who fuel it with our Torah, our davening, our mitzvahs. We create the energy source for God's goodness to come into the world. We activate the system, and then the system works by bringing all that shefa, all that good, back to us. But we're the ones who kibiyachol give God the power to shower us with goodness, because he wants us to be dynamic. And therefore, a sacrifice harnesses all the powers, both without the person and from within the person, directs them towards God, and then that gives the energy to the system that God created to bring back goodness into the world. That's how sacrifices work. Therefore, what God is basically saying is the following. Just like the king told his wife, basically, they're my children too. Of course I want to take care of them. But it's much different taking care of them where it's all one-sided, where I'm going to take care of them even if they don't deserve it, than if they deserve to be taken care of because they honor me, they respect me, they are faithful servants. So of course I want to take care of them. And not only that, but they will be the source and the cause of why I will relate to them good. Not that I'll be the cause. Not that I will take care of them because I feel a responsibility towards them. I'll take care of them because they deserve to be taken care of. It's a much different kind of taking care of. It starts with them. They are the cause. They are the foundation. Instead of my taking care of them being something that comes from me, it's coming from them. That's a much higher level. Same thing. God said, before you command me to take care of appointing a leader to my children, we don't want a leader who's going to do it for them. We want a leader who's going to bring out their potential, going to bring out the powers that they have and guide them and mentor them and teach them how to do it themselves. So first command them about sacrifices, where they can harness all the powers that they have within them, in their little world and in the bigger world, and then a leader will help. Now a leader can harness all of those powers they have, guide them, mentor them, bring out the best within them. So before you command me about a leader that's going to be one-sided, where the leader is going to do it for them, command them first to harness and bring out their qualities. Okay, now, comes out from this that the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, was to a certain degree a sin in the misunderstanding of a leader. they put too much trust, too much importance in Moshe Rabbeinu. If Moshe's not here, we can't function. That's not true. Moshe is merely a mentor to bring out the potential you have. Don't feel that you can't function without a Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, you need another leader, but don't panic. Don't start looking for magical leaders to take Moshe Rabbeinu's place. And therefore, how did Moshe Rabbeinu react to the sin of the golden calf when he came down from the mountain? He broke the luchos. I think there's an idea in it of the following. There are many ideas. But based on everything we spoke about until now, this idea also is there. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you look at me in a very distorted way. You think that I am the one who's doing everything for you. So I'm coming to give you the Torah, and I'm the one who's going to do it all for you. Not going to happen. I'm going to break these loopholes. I'm not giving you anything. And you're going to have to get them back with your own hard work, repentance, davening, or whatever. You're going to have to deserve to get them back. Don't look to me as somebody who's conveying you the Torah. I'm just giving it to you on a silver platter. You're going to have to work now to get it back. And that's what happened. Over the next 80 days, they have to do tshuva, and they have to deserve for God to give them back the luchos on Yom Kippur. But it was a process of tshuva. It was a process where they were involved and they were dynamic. Not where Moshe Rabbeinu came and gave it to them. Because since they did not appreciate Moshe Rabbeinu, when they thought that he's doing it for him. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm not, I'm going to break it. And you're going to have to get it back. Now, I want to connect that to the following. So it comes out that the ideal that a person should reach for is where he's able to be his own leader. He's able to take direction and instruction and learn. But the whole purpose is to develop within himself the ability to be a leader over himself, to control himself, where all of his powers, all of his kohos, all of his
attributes,
that's a good word, all of his attributes, emotions, he's in control of them, and he's a leader over himself, and he functions in a way that automatically everything fits in its place and functions properly. That is the concept of kanos. There's a halacha by Pinchas. Okay, the halacha is that if someone publicly lives with a non-Jewish woman, so the halacha is he doesn't get a regular death penalty. If you bring him to court and two witnesses testify that he's living publicly with a non-Jewish woman, he won't get a death penalty. Won't get a death penalty. Probably give him lashes. Probably rabbinic lashes. But kanoim pogimbo. If somebody is zealous and sees this happening, he has the right to go and kill the person. If he's overwhelmed by his zealousness. If that person comes to ask a shaila, what should I do? I see somebody living together with a non-Jewish woman. We tell him you can't do anything. Halacha, the ein morin kein. The halacha is, if the person on his own is aroused to take the law in his own hands and kill this person, then he's a kanoi. He's a zealous person for God's honor. But if he asks a shaila, we don't tell him to do it. We don't tell him to do it. It's halacha, the ein morin kein. Here's a case where it can't be something that you're told to do. It has to be something that you feel on your own. Now, what is this zealousness? We normally think that a zealous person is a fanatic, an extremist, right? These are the zealots, right? The kanoim, but that's not kanos. The Mesillas Yesharim explains kina. What is kanos? It's a person who is so attuned to love of God. He loves God so much, and he loves the Jewish people so much. And he therefore reacts almost automatically to any affront to God's honor or to the Jewish people's honor. Meaning, he says that if you love your parents very much, and somebody comes and spits on them and insults them, and berates them. A person who really loves his parents is not going to be able to stand by idly and just take it. He's going to have to react. Not because he doesn't like the person who did this. It's because he hates the fact that his parents were insulted because he loves them so much. It's a result of his love for his parents that he reacts. And it's not something that he has to think about doing. It's automatic. It just wells up within him because of his love. Somebody who loves the Rabbanu Shalom and loves the Jewish people and wants them to be successful. And here's somebody who's an evil person who is insulting, worse than insulting God, and harming the Jewish people by sinning and causing them to have perhaps negative results, right? Because people who sin affect the entire Jewish people. So the person, out of his love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his love for the Jewish people, can't stand to see somebody who is endangering the Jewish people through his sins and affronting God and spitting in his face. So he reacts. And if the only way to rid the world of that danger, both to the Jewish people and that insult to God, is to kill that person, then he kills him. But he doesn't do it because he doesn't like the person, because he wants to hurt the person. He does it totally motivated by a tremendous love and consideration for God and the Jewish people. Somebody would be doing something to endanger the Jewish people, right? And you love them so much that you wouldn't want to see them harmed. So even if that person is a Jew who's doing it, right? You want to take away that threat. You want to take away that danger. Here's one person who's perpetrating atrocities against the Jewish people. So you want to get rid of them. If there's another way to do it, you do it. But if there's no other way to do it, you get rid of them. And that's an act of love. It's an act of compassion. It's not an act of destruction. In any case, some say that kanos comes from the word lekane, means to purify. Lekaneach. The word kinuach means to wipe away something, to clean it off. Sometimes there are things that sully the Jewish people, that sully God's honor, and you want to purify it. You want to wipe it off. You want to wipe it away. You don't want to do it because you don't like the dirt. You want to do it because you appreciate what that dirt is making dirty. And you want that thing to be clean. You want the Jewish people to be clean. You want God's honor to be clean. That's the idea of kanos. On the other hand, there is kanos that is not acceptable, where it's not a result, where a person rises to the occasion and his feelings of love of the Rabbanu Shel Olam derive him to do this, but he does it calculated, right? And it's not because of good feelings, it's because he wants to hurt the bad, because he doesn't like the person, whatever it may be. The Reb Chaim Brisker says there are two kinds of kanoia. One is exemplary and one is possible, unfit. And he gives the following example. He says, if there is a mouse loose in the house, so two sources want to get rid of that mouse, a housewife and a cat. But there's a very big difference in the motivation. The housewife wants to rid the house of a mouse, and she'd be very happy if there never was any mice, or if the mouse just decided to exit himself. The cat, on the other hand, right, wants to get rid of that mouse, and he'd be very sad if the mouse exited himself. He likes mice. And he'd be very happy if there are more mice. He'd be very sad if there aren't more mice to get rid of. There are zealots who feel terrible about having to protest and having to, do their zealousness, zealotry, right? But they have no choice. I have to do something. I have to protest. Somebody's spitting in my parents' face. I can't remain quiet. But I would be very happy if the person changed his mind and became a friend of my parent, or just disappeared, and I wouldn't have to do what I'm doing. But there are other people who love to do it. They would not know what to do if they didn't have something to protest. So they're always looking that there should be, you know, two people go to a Hafganah. One is saying, I hope that they The people who are Mechal Shabbos all do tshuva before Shabbos starts. They don't open the parking lots, and I won't have to go protest for the covet of Shabbos. And I can enjoy my Shabbos without having to protest. That kanoi is fit. Then there's a guy who says, ooh, wow, I hope they open more parking lots so I can go. Shabbos is fun when there's protest. Without protest, it's boring Shabbos. So I'm hoping next week there'll be something else to protest. What?
You want theatrical.
Right. That's an unfit zealot. So therefore, it says that when Pinchas did what he did, the Shvatim criticized him. And they said, you see this Ben Puti, this guy who comes from Yisrael, right? His mother's father, what's it called? Elazar, right? Lokach mibnos putia lo leisha, right? No, what's it called? Aaron. Elisheva. No, Elisheva Basaminot, it was Aaron's wife. Who was, what's it called? With Elazar, right? Lokach mibnos putia lo leisha, right? So Pinchas's mother, right? Is that what we're talking about? Or, is there a chumash here?
Grandfather.
So,
he taught.
Who?
He taught.
Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So who was Elazar's wife? Who was?
She was the daughter.
She was the daughter of Yisro.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So Elazar's wife was a daughter of Yisro. So Pinchas was a grandchild of Yisro. So
he became Jewish.
Right, he became Jewish. But in his youth, he used to serve idolatry. So they said, you know where Yisro, where Pinchas got this zealotry from? His zealousness? He got it from his grandfather, and not from the good side, from the bad side, when he was an idolater. And he used to fatten up, what's it called? Here it is, 1 second. Here. And also an hour look at when we've no putil al isha but table was Pinchas. Good, okay, thanks. So it said, you know why Pinchas was so zealous? Not from the a good reason, for a bad reason. Because he comes from Yisro, who in his youth used to fatten up calves for idolatry, to sacrifice to idolatry. So what do they mean? They meant that if Pinchas acted because he loved God so much and he loved the Jewish people and he saw that what Zimri was doing was endangering the entire Jewish people and an affront to God's honor, and he just couldn't stand by idly, he naturally his powers within him welled up within him and reacted, then fine. But they said that's not where it comes from. It came from Yisro, who didn't react on the moment, but he planned out for months fattening up calves for the sake of idolatry. This was not something that happened automatically because Pinchas was so attuned to love of God. It's something that he planned and premeditated, and he did it because he didn't like Zimri, or he wanted to make a big deal, or he liked the action, whatever it was. It came from that premeditated what's it called, fattening up the calves for Avodah Zarah. And the Rabban Shalom says, not true. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Pinchas acted not premeditated with all kinds of cheshbonos. He did it on the spur of the moment because he was attuned. He ruled over his entire being, where all of his emotions welled up within him because they were attuned to what's right. And where did it come from? From Yosef, Shepit Beit BeYitzro. Yosef also acted on the moment. He was, a Yitzhara fell on him. He was in the midst of passion with Ashes Potiphera. And he was able in the moment to push away his Yitzhara because his body was attuned. All of his powers were attuned to function properly. So Pinchas got his powers from Yosef, not from Yisro in his earlier years where he fattened cows for Avodah Zarah. Now, if that's the case, so thinking of the following.
Why Yosef?
What?
How's Yosef related to Israel?
No, because he came from, what's it called? He came from Yosef because Nidnos Putiel, Rashi says, that it wasn't the daughter of Yisro. It was somebody that from the mother's side was from Yosef, and the father's side was from Yisro. Yisro married someone from Yosef's after he converted. So the child came both from Yisro and from Yosef, from Shevet Yosef. Okay. Thinking the following. Shivasar B'Tammuz, which inaugurates the 3 weeks and the beginning of the end of Churban Beis HaMikdash, that 3 week Bein HaMetzarim. So it also has a connection to the Chet HaEgel. That's the time that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos on the Shivasar B'Tammuz. The way we explain Shviras HaLuchos is the concept that the people basically lost control. They needed somebody else to control them. They needed somebody to do it for them, not do it for themselves. And then for Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos to say, I'm not going to do it for you. I'm breaking these Luchos. You want them back? You work on it. You get them back. I'm not going to do it for you. Okay? So the whole idea of Shivasar B'Tammuz vis-a-vis Shviras HaLuchos is the idea that the Jewish people feel they can't control themselves. They don't have the potential, the powers within them to function properly. They need somebody else to do it for them. And Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos to show them that's not the case. What else? 5 things happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz. What were they? Let's start with the last one. Hufka Ha'ir. The Romans broke through the walls of the city. They besieged the city for years before that. And on Shivasar B'Tammuz, they finally broke through the walls. What did that achieve? That the Jewish people were no longer in control. As long as the walls were not breached, they had a certain amount of control over themselves. Now the walls were breached, they lost control over themselves. The Goyim now were in the city, and they basically were in control. Mida keneged mida. If the Jewish people don't know how to control themselves, and they're looking for somebody else to control them, somebody else to do it for them, which was the same sin of the golden calf, why the Luchos were broken on that day, then God says, Mida keneged mida, you can't control yourself, I'll give you somebody else to control you. But not in a good way, in a bad way. That's the punishment. What else happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz? Huamad Selim Behechel. Menashe put an idol inside the Hechel, meaning that it's no longer that your attributes, your powers, your emotions are all directed towards God and you're in control and you're like the Kanoi who functions by nature in a proper way. But there's all different kinds of powers in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. A person's heart, his neshama, is Kodesh HaKadoshim. And you put a tselem, a pestle, in there, and there's a constant dichotomy between what's pulling you, the tselem or the Ribono Shel'Olam. So that is the same idea again. You're not in control. You have that tselem within you that's pulling you the wrong way. And therefore, nisraf haTorah. That's the absence of Torah. Torah is the ability to be able to function properly. Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tafel. I created the Yetzer Hara, the way to control it and channel it and use it properly. The spice that makes the Yetzer Hara good, that you can channel it and be in control of it. Not that it destroys it. A Tavlin doesn't destroy the food. A Tavlin is a spice. It makes the food taste good. So I created the Torah to make the Yetzer Hara good, that you can use all your drives in a positive way. But if you don't control yourself, then the Torah basically is burnt. Then there's no purpose for the Torah. If you don't know how to be a leader over yourself and direct all of your attributes, powers, emotions the proper way. What was the next thing? The next thing was Butel Hatami. This brings us back to what we started with. What also happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz? The Karbonos stopped. Korban HaTomer. They couldn't bring the daily sacrifice. What do we say that sacrifices represent? That a person should be able to harness all the powers of nature, both within him and without, and use them to serve God and get closer to God. And that's why the Rebbe Amram said to Moshe, before you command me about appointing a leader, command my children about sacrifices. Because the leader is not going to be effective if he does it for them. He's going to be effective if he brings out the powers they have. So let them first work on those powers by bringing sacrifices. So on Shivasar Batamas, where they lost control, where they had this idea that the leader does it for them, why the luchos had to be broken, where they had the idea that they're not in control, you're not in control, so we'll let the goyim come and control you. If you're not in control because you have that pestle inside you that's pulling you the other way, then we're going to put a pestle in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You'll see what you look like. And that's the destruction of the Torah. So therefore the Korbanos stopped on that day also. Same idea. And therefore the Rabban Shalom made it a point to tell the Shvatim that they were wrong. They attributed Pinchas not to a total control where his emotions and everything are guided automatically the right way, and therefore when he saw what he saw, he didn't have to be directed to do it. He was not allowed to be directed. If you have to be directed, you can't do it. It wells up within you automatically, and you feel that honor and love of God that pushes you to take revenge, kanos, to be zealous. So the Rebbe Amram, and they said, no, it was premeditated, it was from bad sources, from Yisro, who spent years fattening up cows for Avodah Zarah. God said, no, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. It came from the same desire that Aaron HaKohen had to bring Shalom to the Jewish people. And to, he was a Rodev Shalom. He loved Klal Yisrael. That's where the source came from. Not from Yisro, from Aaron. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. And what's it called? And Heshiv is Hamasi b'al ben Yisrael. He didn't do it to get even with Zimri. He did it to take my anger. He saw that that this person was endangering the Jewish people. B'kanoes kinosi b'socham. He was concerned about my zealousness because this was an affront to Kavod Hashem. That's why he did it. Because of that, he didn't destroy the Jewish people. It all came from a positive source. Therefore, from this action will come peace and harmony, not destruction. The destruction wasn't for the sake of destruction, and the benefit was indirect. It was the benefit that was direct. The destruction was indirect. He had to kill this person. There was no other way to bring harmony and peace to the Jewish people. So he had to do it. But he didn't do it to kill Zimri. He did it to bring harmony and peace. Therefore, Brisi Shalom. He's getting my covenant of peace. V'hoysalo Bris Kahunas Olam. The second thing. Kohen is God's servant. He ministers to God. He is totally subjugated to God. That's also what happened with Pinchas. He's totally subjugated to me. His entire being is subjugated. He functions automatically to want to honor me, to love me, to serve the Jewish people. The Kohen is both subjugated to the Jewish people and to God. That's where Pinchas did what he did. From that automatic subjugation to God and the Jewish people. He's a Kohen, so he deserves to be a Kohen. He wasn't a Kohen till now. Only Aaron's children were Kohanim. And only those who would be born after Aaron was given the Kohen. But Pinchas was already born, and he wasn't going to be a Kohen. So he got the Kuna because he acted like a Kohen. And Bahayalo Ulazaro Achara. It's also for future generations. Because basically, when you're able to function automatically, intuitively, on the second, on the moment, right, it has to be something that's going to have continuation. You can't function impetuously. There's another word I'm looking for, but that's good enough for now, right? Without considering what the repercussions are going to be. There are people who function on the moment, spontaneously. Thank you, that's exactly the word I'm looking for. You get $50. not for me, but spontaneously. It's very nice to function spontaneously, but the drawback is that you don't always think what the implications and repercussions are going to be. How's it going to be for the future? But somebody who functions spontaneously, not because he's impetuous, but because he's attuned to what's right, and it happens automatically, that kind of person, the spontaneous reaction is not impetuous, and therefore it's not something that could have harm in the long run. It's something that will bring good to the long run too, because he's doing it because he's attuned to what's good, even though it's happening spontaneously. The Mela, Pinchas's reward, is also something that will carry on for all generations. It's not just good for the moment. It's good for all time. That kind of zealousness, which a person does spontaneously, is the kind of zealousness that brings peace, harmony, that shows, that comes from a total subjugation to God, and therefore a person functions almost automatically. He's in total control, where he doesn't have to even premeditate or think about it. It happens automatically, and even though it happens spontaneously, the repercussions, the implications are good. And therefore, the Medrash says, "Bedin hu sheyitol scharo Pinchas belazar lachein emor." Therefore, it's within the what's it called? It is proper. Bedin hu, he deserves to get his reward. So what does that mean? He deserves to get his reward. So all different commentaries. I think it means the following: normally, a person is given a reward. Right, he's mekabel, he receives his reward. God gives reward. Here it says, "Bedinu sheyitol scharo," he should take his reward. Meaning the following: reward normally is you do something you're commanded to do, so the one who commanded you rewards you for listening to the command. But when a person does kanos, he's not doing a command. He's not commanded. If he asks if he should do it or not, he can't be commanded from the outside to do it. It's something that has to come spontaneously from himself, because he's in such total control and so subjugated to God that this is something that automatically his limbs and his emotions and his powers do it automatically. And therefore, since the action was automatic, was something that was spontaneous, that came from himself, he's not going to get rewarded because somebody told him to do something. He's going to take his reward just as much as what he did was natural, was automatic. The reward is natural and automatic. It's not something that has to be given to him. It's something that automatically he gets. It's something just as much as what he did was automatic. Okay, that's more or less the ideas that I wanted to bring out. One second. You're too far away for me to hear you without my glasses. Yes, now I see who you are. Yeah. He can't. He can't. And therefore, if he has to think about it, he shouldn't do it. It's only if it's so clear that he's doing it because he's moved to do it, then only God knows if he's right or wrong. Pinchas took that risk. Okay? But he knew deep down what was driving him. And God corroborated. If you're not sure, then you can't do it. Then you have to go through the regular channels.
Right. Everything you said so far, Rabbi, that is the question. Why was Pinchas chosen as the next leader? Why was he given to
a Why shoe? Wasn't he what?
Why was
a leader?
The best leader. Why was Yeshua given? If everything you said about Pinchas, he should be the leader. Not Yeshua.
The question, let me repeat the question, good question. If that Pinchas was so great, why wasn't he chosen to be the leader instead of Yeshua? Yeah, let's hear it.
I think he showed demonstrated qualities that serve God. Yeah, necessarily.
Let me amplify that. No, it's not it's a good end. Right, between the two of them. So if we get you the shear, you'll have to do it together with your wife. That's the answer. A kanoi is a tremendously good thing. For emergency situations, that's what you need. but on a regular, ordinary basis, because you have to sometimes compromise situations. You can't always function on the most ideal level because people are not on the ideal. And you have to have a leader who understands when to compromise also. A kanoi can't compromise. A kanoi can't be a leader. Yes or no? Yeah, that was a one-time thing. But he wasn't a kanoi in he knew how to compromise too.
He said, "Lead Hashem and I," and he killed 3,000 people.
100%. But Moshe Rabbeinu also knew when the time was not to be a kanoi. Pinchas was always a kanoi. That's one answer.
Well, he had one test.
Yeah, I'm saying, but that was his nature. The Rabbeinu knew that. And therefore, he didn't appoint him to it. God was the one who made him believe. And God knew that Pinchas' nature was great, but not as an ongoing leader. There's another answer. That is, Pinchas was a Kohen. Kohanim cannot be Malachim. There are two different tchumim, two different regiments.
This was before they were tchumim.
Well, that doesn't make a difference. The Malchus was for Yehuda. He had those qualities to be a Melech, and the Kohuna had different qualities. They weren't the same.
He was a Melech also.
What?
Moshe Rabbeinu was a Melech.
Yeah, and could be Moshe was not a Melech. It was a Shaila with a Moshe at a dinner of a Melech. But he wasn't a Melech that his children became Malachim after. So, and Yeshua did have a din of a Melech. Moshe is a Shiloh, whether he had a din of a Melech or not. Yeshua. What? Yeah, yeah. Because there could be from other tribes, like Shaul, temporarily could be the Melech until there was a permanent Melech, but not from Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi couldn't be Melech. Moshe Rabbeinu was an exception. But once there was Kohuna, Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed leader before there was Kohuna. Once there was Kohanim, Kohanim can't be. And that was the mistake that the Chashmonoyim made. They took over the Melucha and they were punished for it. Because a Kohen is a different kind of leader than a Melech. He has different qualities, and therefore the two can't be the same. Right. Right. 100%. And he did it, though, by killing two people. Okay? That's Kanoz. He didn't do it because he didn't like these people. He didn't do it because he loved an excuse to, you know, get out his aggression. He did it out of total love and concern for the Jewish people and to champion God's honor, love of God. The killing was all indirect, right? Was a side thing. Many people who are zealous, the opposite is the case. Sometimes it comes out good for the Jewish people, honor for God, but their main thing is to get out their aggression. They're just looking for an excuse. That's a good excuse. Right, that kind of kanos could be. Right.
As opposed to kina, is that the difference?
I don't know if there's a difference between the kanaut is more the noun, and kanaut is the description of that. Kina is what you do, and kanaut is what you are. Kanaut, it describes the type of behavior, and kina is the behavior itself.
So, kina is a bad thing in general, isn't it?
Kina? No, kina could be jealousy. Here, jealousy and zealousy are two different things. Different kind of kina.
There's got to be a different word for it.
Right, okay, but it's called... Right, but the idea of being jealous for something, right, is also being zealous. But there's another kind of jealousy where you covet something of somebody else. That's a different kind of thing.
So how do you know which?
Only from the context. Yeah. Is? Oh, yeah, okay, that makes it... There's two kinds of functioning spontaneously. But all you just said now I can explain what I said better, because I have the words to use it. Sometimes people function impetuously, without thinking, and bad things come to them. On the spot, it's a good thing, it's a good reaction, but it's not in the long run good. That's impetuous. Then, sometimes a person can function spontaneously. And why is he functioning spontaneously? Because he's doing it instinctively, and his instincts are good. He's attuned to what's right. Then the spontaneous will, in the long run, be good too, because the reason he's functioning like that is because that's the good way to do it, because he's instinctively attuned to what's good. That explains what exactly what I wanted to say.
But
in the words,
there were pre-programmed kind of things, and not on a higher level.
Okay, but person pre-programs himself. If you pre-program from somebody else, it's not so good. But if you pre-program yourself, you've reached a level where you have wired yourself to the point where you always function spontaneously on, from good instinct, that's a very high level. That's the real epitome of Kanos, of real Kanos. That was Pinchas. But again, but a leader has to be able to compromise sometimes. It's a different kind of leadership. That's good for a Kohen. It's not good for a leader who has to deal constantly with people too.
Except for Moshe
Rabbeinu. I'll tell you why Moshe Rabbeinu was an exception, just off the top of my head. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was the Amud HaTorah. He personified Torah. And with Torah, everything is okay. Because you can function in every different way. The Torah contains everything. So somebody who is the epitome or the embodiment, I hate to use that word because that sounds very Christian, but the person who represents the essence of Torah can function in all these different levels. Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, was equal to all 600,000 Jews. He had within him all the qualities of everybody. He included, because the Torah is Torah Hashem Temima. But if you're not a Moshe Rabbeinu who embodies the Torah, then you only have one kind of attribute, right? One kind of personality. Then the personalities clash from a Kohen to a Melech or whatever. That's the difference.
Well, Rabbi, I also learned that because he grew up in Pharaoh's palace, he learned about Malchus and
how to be a king. Okay, that could be too. But that's the reason why he grew up in Pharaoh's palace, so he would learn that. Right? It wasn't an accident. That's how the Rabbanu Shalom decided to let him learn about Malchus, or to learn what Malchus isn't by seeing the negative of power. One of the two. Okay. In any case, I think that I have a lot clearer what I wanted to say to begin with. I thank you for being a sounding board, and you added a lot also, especially a lot of the words to describe it. So if it works out on Shabbos, I'll give you credit. And if it doesn't work out, I'll blame you.